are Locked On Saints, your daily New Orleans Saints podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is good, Houdat Nation and Houdat family? Welcome into this Friday edition of Locked On Saints, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Ross Jackson here at Ross Jackson NOLA on Twitter, editor over at CanalStreetChronicles.com, and your host covering your New Orleans Saints every single Monday through Friday. Draft day one is in the books, and to be honest, a lot of Saints fans are a bit in shock. The Saints passed up on a couple of fan favorites to do what they do so very often in the draft and take the best player available on their board. And on today's episode, we're going to recap the first round. We'll talk about why the Saints selected Michigan offensive lineman Cesar Ruiz at number 24, what it means for other players on the team, specifically Larry Warford, and what the Saints have left to address in their draft. Then to close out the show, we'll take a look at where the Saints might look to address their linebacker position specifically with Thor Nystrom of Waterworld.com and NBC Sports. We got all that and a little bit of land yet for you on today's episode of Locked On Saints, your team every day. So many of you that listen to the intro there are either going, who? Or you're still fuming because of the massive upset that took place in the first round of the NFL draft, particularly for Saints fans at pick number 24, selecting Michigan offensive lineman Cesar Ruiz. Now, I will be completely honest with you, and y'all know I am oftentimes the voice of reason when it comes to things like this, to where maybe things don't go the way that fans will expect. You can certainly expect that out of me here, but I do want to clarify first and foremost my stance that drafting Cesar Ruiz was a good selection. Is it the selection that I would have made? No. Patrick Queen was still on the board. Patrick Queen was my guy behind Kenneth Murray, who ended up going to the Chargers, who the Saints traded in front of the Saints to select. We don't know if they were trying specifically to get in front of the Saints, or they were mostly trying, or maybe they were trying to get in front of the Vikings or the Ravens. Not really sure how that worked out, but they ended up selecting Kenneth Murray, and he was off the board at 23. So the Saints went with Cesar Ruiz, offensive lineman out of Michigan. Again, is this a good selection? Yes. And here's why. Cesar Ruiz is the type of player that is exactly what the Saints are going to look for in a first rounder. He's incredibly smart. He's very effective. Fantastic pass blocker. Fantastic run blocker. Has very good positional versatility along the interior. He played most of his games at center, but also started some games at right guard as well. That breakdown is actually 26 at center and then 5 games at right guard. He's played every game for which he was eligible, and he's just a very, very good, smart player. And he's not somebody that was drafted to be a project at that. Sean Payton confirming with New Orleans media that they didn't draft Cesar Ruiz to be a backup. As he said, Larry Warford's going to have to fight for his spot, and it'll be interesting to see exactly where Cesar Ruiz plugs in, because there's a lot of options with a player like this and with the players that the Saints have on the interior offensive line going into the 2020 season. Larry Warford is pretty limited. He can play on the right side, play at right guard. That's pretty much where he lives. That's where he spent pretty much his entire NFL career, and the Saints did notice a drop-off in him over the last couple of seasons, something that they've been very concerned with. Now, some of you may say, well, what about the drop-off when it comes to Andres Pete? And the fact of the matter is that the versatility that Andres Pete brings and the specialization that Andres Pete brings is always going to help set him apart from somebody like Larry Warford. So that's one of the reasons why you're seeing Andres Pete get a big contract in the same offseason as Larry Warford is potentially getting replaced, because according to Sean Payton, he's going to have to compete for his role. Now, is he going to compete specifically with Cesar Ruiz, or is it going to be as Larry Holder and I discussed a couple of days ago, more so a competition with last year's second round pick, but first pick in terms of where the Saints selected in Eric McCoy, who had played center his rookie season for the Saints after Max Unger's surprise retirement, or at least surprise for the fan base. Now, is Warford going to be competing with McCoy? Because the Saints seem pretty comfortable with the idea of moving McCoy to the guard position, and then you can keep Cesar Ruiz at the center position. You have an extremely highly intelligent player that can operate from there, help to work with Drew Brees during this season or the future quarterback in the next season. So that's something to really think about, is that while this isn't quote unquote a win now move, which is really only a fan mentality, and I know I fall into it, the team doesn't care about win now. That's never been their mode. That's never been their move. Their move has always been best player available in the draft. That's why they spend their time addressing needs in free agency. So win now doesn't actually exist in the NFL spectrum in terms of what the team is looking for. Let me say the New Orleans spectrum in terms of what the team is looking for. You can see win now moves all the time, like the Los Angeles Rams, like the San Francisco 49ers, who are now trying to dig their way out of cap hell. But when you look at what this move helps you for a very long time, because you do have some very solid, you essentially have three of your five offensive linemen locked down for the next 10 years in Eric McCoy, in Cesar Ruiz, as well as in Ryan Ramczyk. So with that being the case, and with the idea that you're not going to have Drew Brees pretty much after this season, very likely, diagnosing coverages, diagnosing blitzes, and you need a smart player at that center position to call the shots for the offensive line. Now you don't have to worry about as much of a drop off in that, because you get a highly intelligent player in Cesar Ruiz that can help your young quarterback, or your in Taysom Hill's scenario, inexperienced quarterback. Not that Taysom Hill is, you know, young, but certainly doesn't have a lot of experience as a starting quarterback in the NFL, or any at all for that matter. So with that being the case, Cesar Ruiz is a really good pick here. Like I mentioned before, is it the pick that I would have made? No, absolutely not. But you can see where he fits. You can see exactly what the Saints team was doing. And there's still 223 selections left in this draft for the Saints to address the linebacker position. So the Saints come out in the first round. They address one of the checklist items that was on Sean Payton's list earlier on in the offseason, where he mentioned interior offensive line specifically as being a place that they're going to continue to address. They sign and bring in Cam Tom since then. Now they draft Cesar Ruiz. Now, what comes next? What does the addition of Cesar Ruiz mean for the team, the players around him, and really just the rest of this draft for the New Orleans Saints? That's what we've got coming up next for you here on Locked On Saints, your team every day. All right, y'all, let's keep digging into the Cesar Ruiz pick here. Again, the Saints going with Cesar Ruiz at number 24, offensive lineman, interior offensive lineman, mostly center, but also played a little bit of right guard out of Michigan. And again, I would have gone Patrick Queen here, but I can see what the Saints were thinking. I talked about what his fit is in the last segment. Now, let's expand upon that a little bit, because his fit essentially has a ripple effect across the rest of the interior offensive line. Him being drafted could mean a position change for Eric McCoy, which is something that the Saints have talked about for months now. Larry Holder has talked about it. He brought that to us when he was on the show earlier on this week, that they could potentially go offensive line and then move Eric McCoy to right guard if they end up finding a center that they like. Now they get the league's, or the draft's rather, top rated center in Ruiz. So that's one example of the sort of butterfly effect that comes with this selection at pick 24. But the other elements of this are pretty glaring, particularly for two names, Nick Easton and Larry Warford. Now, I mentioned in the last segment that Larry Warford is somebody that has seen a bit of a decline, and certainly one that has concerned the Saints enough that they have openly discussed it. Not only do they talk about it all at the combine, all out loud, I mean, you've also seen Sean Payton discussing with New Orleans media this evening, saying Larry Warford's got to fight for his spot. He's got to work, essentially. He's got to compete, and that's how you make your team better. And that's true. That is how you make your team better. You bring in competition for those positions, particularly where you see a potential drop off in production. But man, apparently whatever they're seeing in Larry Warford is not great, and it does not spell good news for Larry Warford. So you can pretty much expect that Larry Warford may not be on this roster. I'm not going to say anything about 2020, because I think he will be on the roster in 2020, but I think he most certainly will not be on the roster in 2021. He's in a contract year right now. He'll be into a new deal next year. No way that with all of this, the Saints end up re-signing him and bringing him back to New Orleans. So now they're set at those positions along the interior, as well as on the right end, the right side with Ryan Ramczyk for the future. But it is a big question in terms of how quickly anyone ends up usurping the duties of Larry Warford, because now Larry Warford's going to be in competition during camp here, but probably with Eric McCoy. That seems to be the most likely thing, with Ruiz plugging in at center, which Eric McCoy would then vacate, which is a great fit for the Saints. But it's something else to see this. And this is Sean Payton. This is what the Saints do. I mean, if you find a best player available somewhere in your draft that you're willing to either make a move for or take in your first round, and you have somebody established at that position, it's up to the person that's established that position to keep their job. It's not up to the Saints to make them comfortable. And that's certainly what the Saints have not done in terms of making things comfortable for Larry Warford. So that's something to consider. And the next thing that I would look at when it comes to Larry Warford is that I wonder if in camp he loses his starting job, does he pick up a trade market? Interior offensive line play in the NFL is not all at all fantastic. It's very up and down. You either have really good guards or you have very bad guards. Imagine the fact and really consider the fact that Andres Pete made the Pro Bowl last year. Even as an alternate, he still made the Pro Bowl last year. So that should tell you everything you need to know about offensive line play or interior offensive line play, even just within the NFC, let alone across the NFL. And we know that Andres Pete also had suitors outside of New Orleans for his next contract when, you know, before settling on his guaranteed $33 million with the Saints. So with all of that, I wonder what this means for Larry Warford if there ends up being a trade market for him and if he loses that starting job and how comfortably the Saints might be with moving him if the right offer comes along from a team that looks and says, hey, they've got quite the bottleneck over there in the interior. I wonder if we can get Larry Warford up off their hands and get a new starting right guard on their team. Now, do I think that's going to happen during the draft? No. Can it? Yes, totally. But I do think that Larry Warford first is going to get his opportunity to fight for his job, essentially, in camp. And then after camp, maybe that would be the time to where you could see the Saints making a move for him in a for a draft pick in the 2021 draft, which is much further away and therefore carries a little bit less value for teams as opposed to the, you know, trading within the draft, which is where draft picks have the most value. So interesting thing to watch there. The other thing is Nick Easton. With Cameron Tom back in the building, Will Clapp still around, and then you still have your starting guards in Warford for now at least, and Andres Pete, and now you have Ruiz and McCoy that can seriously, and not to be rude, but can really make Nick Easton kind of irrelevant for this team. And the Saints can save $4.3 million if they move on from him before June 1st. After June 1st, if they move on from him, they can get an additional $1 million back at $5.3 million, which gives them an opportunity to dip into that late free agent market that they like to dip into so much, as well as the trade market. Remember, the Saints made a trade for Kiko Alonso at the beginning of the season last year, and that was one of their bigger moves leading into, at least between the draft and the top of the year. I'm not trying to speculate or draw any lines that aren't actually there, but we do know that Quan Alexander, a linebacker very much like Patrick Queen, and not just because they went to LSU, but because they're both great in coverage, they're both very athletic, and they both have the same size profile, is on the market. Could the Saints look to make a little bit of cap room so that they could absorb his cap hit, even though San Francisco would have to foot a little bit of that bill anyway? So very interesting sort of ripple effect that goes on when it comes to the personnel, just the players within the interior offensive line. Now, the next question comes down to what does this mean for the Saints moving forward in this draft? What do they still have left to address? Well, basically, everything that we've talked about that they had to address early in this draft in the first place, being linebacker and wide receiver, which we've done research on for every single round in terms of where they're going to look. They could potentially also continue to look at corner. We know that the Saints love to take defensive backs. They've taken them in every single year of the Sean Payton era. You heard me talk about that over and over again. There's still some fantastic options at each of those positions left. We'll hear a little bit more from Thor Nystrom in the next segment. He's going to help us break down some late day three guys, but there's still some good day two guys out there as well, and Marcus Bailey, Logan Wilson, Hakeem Davis-Gaither, Troy Dye, very, very good players that are all very good in the coverage game. Hakeem Davis-Gaither being my absolute favorite. A lot of people really, really like Willie Gay as well. We'll talk a little bit more about him in a moment, but there are still some very, very good options for the Saints at linebacker. Sean Payton did mention and did acknowledge, though, that those linebackers, he anticipates to go off the board quickly, but they will look to move up if it makes sense, and I assume that would mean moving up for that linebacker in that he sort of brought that up upon his own volition right after talking about how he expects the linebackers to go pretty quickly. So connect the dots there. You can see the Saints mobilizing just as we've all expected now that they're no longer on the clock until pick number 88. Do we really think they're going to wait until 88 if those linebackers are going to fly off the board and Sean Payton is openly acknowledging that linebacker is a need? Nah, I have a hard time believing that they're going to wait around. So we'll see what happens. Logan Wilson, Hakeem Davis-Gaither, Troy Dye, even Willie Gay, Marcus Bailey, all very good options for the Saints. Justin Trinada as well. They met a lot with guys like Michael Walker, who's a later round pick, as well as Davion Taylor. So still some very, very good ones there for the Saints that they could go to in day two or the top of day three. But ideally, for me at least, and I'm sure many of you agree, we don't know how the Saints feel, but for most of us, early day two is the preference when it comes to linebacker, because we've seen what happens to this defense when they lose some depth and some starters to injury along that second level, and none of us want to relive that. So it sounds like the Saints went out there and got exactly who it was that they wanted in round one. It seemed that they were willing to trade up. They were connected to Jonathan Taylor for a little bit, the running back out of Wisconsin, so there was a lot flying around. But according to Sean Payton, he got exactly the guy that they wanted in the draft, and the first round sort of played out exactly as they expected. So with that being the case, Thor Nystrom joins us here in just a moment to put a button on today's show. We've talked about Cesar Ruiz, where he fits in, what he does, what his effect will be on the rest of this draft, as well as the potential players around him, or potentially for the players that are around him as well, for as early as 2020. So we'll continue to track all that. We'll dig more into that next week. But coming up next, Thor Nystrom joins us as we need to take a look at what linebackers have the potential to come in and fill the role for the Saints that many of us were looking to have a linebacker selected in the first round to do. That's coming up next here on Locked On Saints, your team every day. All right, y'all. So we're going to wrap up today's episode with a little bit of insight from our good friend over at WordWorld.com, as well as NBC Sports, Thor Nystrom. You can follow on Twitter at ThorKU, or as he likes to say, ThorKU. So make sure that you check him out as always. He joined us earlier in the week, talked a bunch about where the Saints might be able to go during this draft. And then we also dug into some of the sort of lesser known guys at positions of need for the Saints that could fill 60 to 70% what some of these first round talent guys, or even in some cases, even better. So we'll take a look at some of those. But before we get to that, just another quick thing on Saints draft tendencies to sort of help you out here in terms of what to expect in the second day. So in each of the last 10 years, since 2010, when the Saints take offense or defense in the first or earliest selection, right? So it could be first round. Last year, their earliest selection was Eric McCoy in the second round. They followed that up with the opposite side of the ball. So if they go offense with the earliest selection, they tend to go with their next selection, defense, and then vice versa. If they go defense first, then offense with their second selection. This is at each of the last 10 years, 10 years in a row that they've done this. And also over the last 14 years since 2006, they've done it 12 times. So seems pretty reasonable to expect that with the Saints going offensive line and going over to the offensive side in the first round today, that tomorrow when we get around to whenever they select, whether it be in the third round or in the second round, that defense could be or should be the pick here. And I know that many of us believe that it absolutely should be, because linebacker is still the biggest need on the board for the Saints. So now some of the early day two guys you've already heard me talk about. We've talked a ton about Akeem Gavis Dather out of Appalachian State. You've heard a ton about him. You've heard a ton as well. You've heard me mention Marcus Bailey, talk about Marcus Bailey out of Purdue. So there's some really good options for the Saints early in day two. And there's some other guys that are good options in day three. So you're going to get some day three options here from Thor. But when it comes to the first one we're going to talk about out of Mississippi State, Willie Gay, I really can see Willie Gay being a day two guy. The only thing are the character concerns and things like that. But as Mickey Loomis acknowledged in yesterday's quick media conference with Saints media, he mentioned that, A, if they have a long-term vision for a player, that's what matters most, not character issues that they feel like they can deal with, and not sort of other red flags they feel like that they can work through with a player. So here we go. Thor Nystrom here. Follow him on Twitter at ThorKU. He's going to give us some insight on some of those round three, day three type selections at linebacker that still might be able to bring some starting potential to the Saints second level, and certainly some insurance against injuries, which the Saints suffered with a lot at some pivotal points last season.
One guy, you know, sticking with the SEC theme, you know, early day three kind of guy. Now, this would be, he's a boom or bust kind of guy, but if he's available early day three, I would love this kind of pick. He's in the same vein. Willie Gay Jr. from Mississippi State.
I love that kid.
Yeah, he's going to fall down a little bit because he's kind of a head case, and you can remove the word kind of from that sentence. He didn't play a lot of snaps in college. Like last year, for instance, he was suspended 8 or 9 games because of academic fraud. The game he comes back, he gets ejected for two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, and then right before the bowl game, he breaks the starting quarterback's orbital bone, and the starting quarterback had to miss the game. but they didn't suspend Willie Gay for that game. He had 11 tackles and a TFL in the bowl game. But I mean, you know, Willie Gay, he played less than 1,000 snaps total in college. But the thing about him is high octane athleticism. Like, mm-hmm. I think the only linebacker in this class that's more athletic than him is Isaiah Simmons. And I don't really consider Isaiah Simmons a linebacker. He's more of an alien. Willie Gay, he had 98th percentile spark athleticism. Like, that's ludicrous. You know, 4.46 speed. He's a dice roll for sure. But, you know, in the fourth round, God only makes so many people that are that big that move that way.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, Willie Gay is 6'1", 243. You don't see human beings that big that move that way. So he'd be one guy. Another guy that I kind of like as far as sleepers go, Tanner Muse from Clemson.
I love Tanner Muse.
Yeah, Tanner Muse is super fun. He was a guy that was listed as a safety at Clemson, but he was more of a hybrid guy where he played, you know, some deep safety, and then he'd play in the box a lot. But he's a very athletic kid. He tested in the 91st percentile as a safety. You're talking about another kid who's super fast, 4.41, and that's at 6'2", 227. And he's got the frame to add a little bit of weight as well. His PFF grades were always good, and again, in a variety of roles. So you know that he can do different stuff. The other thing I like about Tanner Muse is the one big issue with his game was he would get singed in coverage downfield, you know, when they'd keep him as like an overhang safety. Mm-hmm. But if you look into his PFF grades, when they had him in the box and he was covering, you know, running backs and tight ends, his coverage grades were very, very good. And so if you just stick him at linebacker in the NFL, he has all the athleticism in the world to cover the guys that he's going to be covering there. And so I think that he is a sleeper linebacker. You know, if he's a guy that's available day three, I think he would be another, you know, athletic kind of guy to look at. The last name I'll toss at you, mm-hmm. And this is a local kid, so he's sort of near and dear to my heart. Another kind of sleeper type guy, another athletic kid, Carter Coughlin from Minnesota. You probably know where I'm going with this, Rots. Carter Coughlin's a guy that was played out of position in college. He was a high recruit, a local kid. They played him on the edge because Minnesota, you know, they don't get a ton of top flight athletes or whatever. Carter Coughlin was a 4-star recruit. So they put him on the edge to sick him after the quarterback because he was the best guy they had to do it. And he did very well in college. He was a stud, but he's 6'3", 236. He doesn't project to the edge in the NFL. So he's got to move to off ball linebacker. The reason he's going to fall down the boards is because we haven't seen him much at off ball linebacker. We haven't seen him in coverage, you know, doing off ball linebacker type stuff. We mostly just seen him getting after the quarterback. So he hasn't been able to prove the concept. But one thing he did prove the concept of, he went to Indy and tested out of his mind. You know, he was another guy that tested tremendously. He tested in the 85th percentile in terms of spark at 6'3", 236. And again, in college, he was tremendous, and including in coverage. You know, his coverage grades were great. He was great against the run. And I know that he can get after the passer, you know, if you're going to send him on blitzes. So I think that he is a sleeper at linebacker as well.
All right, y'all. That's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Saints. Big thank you, as always, to Thor Nystrom of RotoWorld.com, as well as NBC Sports at ThorKU on Twitter. That's going to do it for this week's episodes. I might bring a little bit of a bonus episode this weekend, but you can always check me out as well over at the Whole Nine Sports live stream that we're doing all weekend for the NFL draft. And of course, I'll have a lot of video content and stuff coming out over at Canal Street Chronicles as well. So make sure that you keep up with that. It was a very eventful day one here in the NFL draft. If you want to hear about the entire draft and get all the lowdown from all across the league, make sure you tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NFL. And I'll holler at y'all here in just a couple of days, probably sooner rather than later, because I expect the Saints to be very active these next couple of days within the draft. That's going to do it for today, y'all. Thank you, as always, for coming through. Once again, I'm Ross Jackson. You can find me on Twitter at Ross Jackson, NOLA. Hit me up. Let me know how the family's doing. Let me know how you're living. Let me know how your mom and them. Tell your friends, family, and fellow Saints fans about the show. And if you haven't already, please take a moment to subscribe. Drop that 5-star rating and review. I thank you so much for all your support and for helping me grow this family. This has been Locked On Saints, and trust Who Dat Nation. I'll holla at you.